I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
With the beginning of the school year just weeks away, what might the COVID protocols look like in the classroom this year?
The CDC is planning to simplify and streamline a wide number of its COVID-19 recommendations, starting in the classroom.
After 2.5 years of social distancing, masking, testing, and quarantining, it looks like many of those protocols will be behind us. It will also mean a more normal-looking school year with more kids in the classroom and less stress for students and parents. And the timing seems right.
I am feeling like we're in a better place and we don't need to have as many restrictions. But I do think there are some common sense, science-informed guidelines that do need to be followed. Like, we want to keep kids who are symptomatic and sick out of the classroom until they no longer pose an infectious threat.
This week on 880 In Depth, COVID and schools. Where are we today? And what do parents need to know? Welcome to 880 In Depth. I'm Tim Scheld. This academic year will feel more like the pre-COVID days, rather than what we've seen these past 3 years. Mask requirements are all but gone and will likely only be used if a child has been exposed to the virus. But there is this feeling that it is an option that still needs to remain on the table.
I do think we need to hold on to the idea of masks on threat. For example, if there is a new variant that is causing severe disease or evading vaccines and things like that.
Social distance requirements are being relaxed, and test-to-stay policies are being eliminated. And those testing guidelines, they're changing significantly.
I think there's a shift to move away from testing for pretty much any purpose other than identifying whether or not someone who is symptomatic has COVID or not.
But that's troubling to the head of New York City's teachers union.
We still believe very strongly in a testing program where we have the ability to screen.
We'll hear more from Michael Mulgrew later. We'll also have a conversation with Dr. Rosha McCoy about the importance of vaccines.
For most children, the cases are either asymptomatic or very mild. But there is a significant proportion of children who do get pretty sick and a proportion of kids who do die.
But let's start with Dr. Dennis Nash. He's a distinguished professor of epidemiology at the CUNY Graduate School of Public Health. He sat down with reporter Peter Haskell, saying he's optimistic about the coming school year.
I mean, I think we are in a much better place on almost every front than we were last year and in prior years in terms of things that we know that we can do or we are doing to keep kids safe and also their families and households. And I think, vaccination obviously is the big game changer since last school year, with the very young kids now being able to be vaccinated. And all the vaccination will protect them all against severe disease and also slightly reduce the risk of long COVID that they would face if they were to become infected. And I think, to me, that long COVID is the lingering outcome that we have not really fully figured out how to prevent and to avoid, other than avoiding COVID itself. Vaccination doesn't prevent it, although we know younger kids are at lower risk of getting long COVID than older people, so that's good. So the way to avoid long COVID is to lower the risk of infection, and vaccines only do that for a brief period of time. And so we need to be thinking about things like improved ventilation and airflow systems and filtration systems in schools. I think these are really important things, and they'll help reduce the risk of not only, you know, bad effects of COVID, but many other pathogens that circulate are in the airborne way. So I think that's a big thing that should be on the radar, or hopefully has been on the radar of many school systems over the summer months.
There are some adults who say, in terms of a second booster, I'm going to wait for a variant-specific booster. Do you think some parents might be waiting either to hear more about possible side effects or to hear if there's a different or better booster on the way?
Well, I mean, to the latter point, I do hope there are better boosters on the way, but that doesn't mean, you know, it's not a good time to get a booster now. I think there's always going to be a need to be staying up to date with COVID vaccines. And when they improve, for example, with bivalent or variant-specific vaccines that are expected to come online this fall, you know, they can get them. But right now, there's a lot of COVID circulating. And for adults, being boosted is really important to protect against severe disease and death. So I did not wait, and I don't think anyone else should wait for new and better boosters. They'll be there when you need them, but you also need one now.
In terms of in the classroom, in the past couple of years, we heard a lot about masking mandates, masking policies, social distance, physical barriers, things like that. Do schools need those things now, or are we beyond that?
Well, I think that masking certainly went by the wayside last year in schools, and I expect that that it will be the same this year. But I do think we need to hold on to the idea of masks on threat. For example, if there is a new variant that is causing severe disease or evading vaccines and things like that. So I think masking will always need to be an important part of prevention. I also think that masking is going to be an important part of people that may have symptoms. If they're coming out of isolation and they've known they've had COVID and they're coming back into the classroom, you know, there's going to be, I think, a lot of discussion about how those isolation periods should be handled. And in situations where schools follow the CDC guidance, which is 5 days of isolation followed by 5 days of mask use, masks are going to be very important in that regard.
These seem to be some pretty critical questions. Under what circumstances should kids be out of school, and should they isolate? Is it symptoms? Is it a positive test? How should we look at this?
Certainly a positive test. And with symptoms, I do think it's important for schools to know and for kids to know what the causes of those symptoms are, whether it be COVID, whether it be flu or strep. All of these things have implications for, you know, preventing outbreaks in schools. And so the test is really important. And I do think, you know, one thing that we've given more attention to during COVID is to try to keep people who are ill and capable of spreading, you know, infections that we don't really want spreading in schools, keeping them out until they're safe to come back. And so I hope that that's something that will happen for COVID, but also for some of these other things like flu and strep.
So to be clear, if someone has symptoms but has not tested positive, should they stay home or should they go to school and make sure they wear a mask?
I think in general, the guidance for that, if you have symptoms, is to stay home and get tested. And if you're negative, then that's another question. But if you're positive, then, you know, that's when you need to begin isolation for COVID.
At what point, then, should children be allowed back to school? And at what point should they be wearing their masks and then taking off their masks?
Yeah, that I think is the key question. And I think we're going to see some very, differing approaches depending on the school system. And one approach, as I mentioned, is the just directly following the CDC guidance. But other approaches include, testing negative before coming out of isolation. So if on day five, you're still positive, then you need to stay in isolation until you test negative. We might see some schools do that. There's also the issue of quarantine and what to do when someone's exposed. I think we've seen a lot of variation in how schools have handled that. And, something that also could involve the use of masks and testing approaches. But I think there's a shift to move away from testing for pretty much any purpose other than identifying whether or not someone who is symptomatic has COVID or not. We may continue to see the use of tests for other purposes, like the test to stay model. But it's going to be very interesting this fall to see how different schools handle it.
What do you think? Is that the best way to go? Only test kids who have symptoms, or do you want to test in other circumstances if someone in the class is sick or any other thing?
I think at a minimum, there should be testing beyond the CDC guidelines, because I do think that kids can be infectious for more than 5 days after they have COVID. And whether or not a test to stay model is for kids, let's say there's been a case in the classroom, do they want to then begin implementing routine testing of everyone on, let's say, a daily basis to see if and only those who are negative be allowed to stay? That I think is a good model, but it's also really challenging and resource intensive to implement, and so I'm not so sure that we'll see that being so widely used.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
A new study on masking in the Boston area brought interesting results. Schools that lifted mask mandates last year had a significant increase in COVID cases. The data showed an additional 45 cases per 1,000. So for a school of 1,000, that's an extra 45 kids getting sick and potentially spreading that virus in school and in their community. The research is yet to be peer-reviewed. Dr. Nash is concerned that some decisions are being made for reasons beyond science. Masks and vaccines, he says, have become part of the culture wars.
Politics has played a huge role in every dimension of the COVID pandemic, and it seems other aspects of public health as well. And so there are some very vocal, there have always been some very vocal individuals and groups in this whole school debate that have the ears of politicians, and because they're loud and influential, tend to have influence on the actual decisions that elected officials make, maybe outsized influence over and above real subject matter experts. And that's always a problem. I mean, there really should not be much room for political influence in some of these decisions about the welfare of kids and the public's health.
It seems like that you are on board with rolling back a lot of the restrictions that we had a year ago or 2 years ago.
I would say yes. Compared to like when we started out, on the conversation, I am on board with fewer restrictions, largely because we are in a much different place now with you know, the, when I think about schools, I think not only about the kids in the classroom and their well-being, but also, you know, faculty and staff who are adults that may be at high risk, and also family members in the household. And so all of that, sort of all those connections, if you think about where we are now, compared to where we were last fall, we now have vaccination for the very young kids. We have boosters for the older adults who are at risk for severe outcomes. We have Paxlovid for those adults who are at risk for severe outcomes. We have Evusheld, which is a which is a sort of preventive monoclonal antibody treatment that people can take who are at, like, for example, if you've had an organ transplant, you can take this and you can really reduce your risk of getting severe COVID. And then, of course, we have for those for whom none or all of these things won't work, we have masks. So, and then on top of that, we have ventilation and air filtration systems that, you know, should be a big strategy of every school. So I am feeling like we're in a better place and we don't need to have as many restrictions. But I do think there are some common sense, you know, science-informed guidelines that do need to be followed. Like, we want to keep kids who are symptomatic and sick out of the classroom until they're no longer pose an infectious threat. And so I think so I'm not in favor of getting rid of all restrictions, and I am in favor of mask use when indicated. For example, when there's a variant where all of these tools are not available, and I am concerned about the risk of long COVID, because we really don't have a good tool to mitigate that yet.
You know, I'll ask you this, and I appreciate your patience. How concerned are you about a new variant upending this entire equation?
Oh, I think it's a very real risk. You know, there's a lot of unmitigated COVID spread happening around the world right now, and the more that happens, the higher the risk of a new variant that could be, you know, along the lines of what we saw with Omicron or worse. So I view it as a very real threat and something that we absolutely need to be prepared for and planning for.
New York City's schools are waiting on the CDC to release its new guidance, but the teachers' union is still concerned. Union leader Michael Mulgrew told our Mac Rosenberg that a hands-off attitude could be dangerous.
We've always worked with our own doctors. The CDC was something we're monitoring. We're very troubled right now because schools have started opening in other parts of the country, and by and large, there's no protections. There's no testing at all. And that's something that we feel would be unacceptable. Because the last thing we want is for a school to become a place where COVID gets spread. But people are getting COVID just because they came to school. So what that, you know, what that means for us, we are now having conversations with the Department of Education. We've made that position clear to them that we need, you know, we still believe very strongly in a testing program where we have the ability to screen. What that program looks like, we'll see what the CDC comes out with in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll take that back to our own doctors and we'll go back to the city. But the COVID itself, I know it's, you know, everyone's decided they want to, you know, basically everyone's like, okay, we can live with it. But at the same time, we don't want a school to become a place where COVID is being spread. So we believe strongly there should be some sort of testing program in place.
So we're entering a year where in a lot of ways, the pandemic's behind us. In a lot of ways, it's not. What kind of permanent changes do you see in the classroom as a result that, you know, teachers are having to deal with now and students?
Last year, the acute, the amount of learning loss, you know, that's the phrase most people understand. The learning loss that we've seen is going to be with us for a couple of years. The social emotional schools have always done social and emotional work, but the level that we're now doing it at, we're not crisis intervention specialists, but that is really what's being thrust upon the schools. And I think that's going to, I think that that's going to be part of, you know, schools, individual schools and school systems now for the foreseeable future. I don't see that ever going away because of what has happened inside of our society, whether it's, you know, the different violence episodes that we've seen, or the effects that we've just, you know, that children are exhibiting because of COVID. And look, we're not, our society as a whole seems to be a very angry place. You turn on TV, it's angry. You turn on, you know, conversations are not civil anymore. And that absolutely has an effect on children. So I think that, you know, more school taking even a bigger role in social emotional support and intervention is now going to be a permanent part of education.
Yeah, and you don't think it'll be just, you know, school social workers dealing with that. It may be teachers, no. Right?
No. That with any thought that that's how it was going to work was blown up last year. Teachers all across the city were dealing with levels of crisis that they were never asked to deal with before because there was just so many children involved.
A significant weapon to reduce infectious spread among kids remains vaccines. According to the CDC, 6 in 10 12 to 17-year-olds have received two shots, but only 3 in 10 5 to 11-year-olds have had both doses. Dr. Rosha McCoy is the chief healthcare officer at the Association of Medical Colleges. She tells our Peter Haskell, getting your child vaccinated is still critical.
For most children, the cases are either asymptomatic or very mild. But there is a significant proportion of children who do get pretty sick and a proportion of kids who do die. And so I think when you think about vaccine-preventable diseases, what families need to think about is the vaccine safe? And is it going to prevent potentially a very severe illness? I mean, most of the vaccines that we give now are like that. You know, most children are not going to get that sick from chickenpox, but most, you know, there is a population of kids and it's a little bit unpredictable to know who's going to get really sick and potentially have a very severe outcome. So these are called vaccine preventable illnesses, and we vaccinate for lots of different kinds of illnesses like that, and COVID is the same way. It's also true that we want to make sure that children with any kind of chronic illness, comorbidity that may make them even at higher risk are definitely vaccinated. But for children who don't have that, it's still important because it has a very safe profile as far as safety. And so the risks, and when you look at the risk and benefits, the benefits certainly outweigh the risk.
You certainly understand this better than most. There are parents who are saying, it's very unlikely my kid gets seriously ill. Shouldn't they be thinking about it in terms of a probability game, just go beyond that? And how do you convince them if they say, look, I know all these kids, nobody's gotten seriously sick, why am I going to take the chance with my kid?
Yeah, I mean, I guess everybody needs to talk to their child's healthcare provider and look at the risks and benefits. This vaccine has an excellent safety profile. There do not seem to be any serious safety issues. There's a little bit of soreness of the arm, but mostly kids aren't even getting that. So if anything, kids are getting milder side effects than adults. And I think when you think about the risk of COVID in this country, it is a risk for children as well. And the other problem is that even though vaccinating doesn't completely protect from transmitting infection, it does make it less. So children can, if they're vaccinated, they're less likely to spread the illness to others who may even be at higher risk. And especially in schools, et cetera, you don't know who those kids are who are at higher risk, who you may be sitting next to somebody who has asthma or maybe have another chronic illness. So really important to prevent the community spread and really important to think about the risk. I mean, I guess I would tell you as a pediatrician, as a healthcare provider, as soon as it was available, I recommended that my granddaughter get the vaccine. So I think you will also hear that most physicians are having their children vaccinated. So it is has a very good safety profile, and we really need to make sure that we don't risk a child getting really seriously ill or die.
Last question for you. If these vaccination rates among children stay low, how concerned are you that as we get into colder weather, as we get into winter, that we could see a spike among children and in communities in general?
Yeah, I am very concerned. I mean, I think when you have a vaccine that's safe and effective, we need to use it. And we don't know if there's going to be other variants coming. You know, right now, the variant that is in the community does not seem to be causing very serious illness in children or hospitalization, but we don't know that that's true for other variants that may be coming. So in general, I think it's very important to, you know, have this vaccine that's free, safe, and effective. To me, that just makes sense for families to get their children vaccinated.
That will do it for this week's 880 In Depth. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Dennis Nash, Michael Mulgrew, and Dr. Rosha McCoy. You can find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts and audio. Please subscribe. Just search for us at WCBS 880 In Depth. The executive producers are myself, Tim Scheld, and Peter Haskell. Thank you for listening and be safe.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.